Dateline, February 27, 1996. Red light! Green light! Prepare yourself for shock. I've never cared much for the outdoors. I grew up fascinated by television and the rewards it offered me in the form of cartoons and video games. I seldom played sports. I cannot swim. And my first summer camp experience at 10 years old turned me off from ever sleeping in a tent again. Yet thinking back on those days, I certainly spent a far greater percentage of my life outside than I do now. I walked to and from school for many years, a mile each way if I recall. My friends and I often played together in our respective backyards, or even in nearby vacant lots. We called one patch of undeveloped land the woods, even though it barely measured a fraction of an acre. Comparatively, I feel like my kids today outshut in me by far, thanks to the internet. They too walk to school, but they otherwise entertain themselves exclusively indoors, watching online videos or chatting with friends, sometimes both at the same time. We moved here thinking they'd make the most of the nearby public park, but that was before smartphones took over. I love a good swing set, but that's not going to win out over anime on demand. I don't know whether my progeny represent the majority of kids today, but I'm positive they're not all terminally online. Years of teaching in elementary schools and strolling through that aforementioned local park have shown me that certain outdoorsy traditions remain strong in our digital era. Specifically, kids love bugs, and here in Japan, there are plenty of distinct varieties to hunt down, capture, and store in clear plastic containers. 30 years ago, presumably when these customs had even more pull, one dedicated developer transformed his own childhood hobby of insect collecting into a handheld game. His dream project arrived quite late in the life of Nintendo's Game Boy, yet it defied the odds and exploded in popularity. This week, we celebrate Satoshi Tajiri and the planet-wide phenomenon he birthed into the world. He called it Pocket Monsters, but you know it by its hip abbreviated title, Pokemon. The world of Pokemon resembles that of late 20th century Earth, with one major revision. Human beings coexist with 151 different species of wild animals, collectively called Pokemon. A vast network of social services care for, study, and train these creatures in order to benefit our mutual integration. While many Pokemon roam free, they can also be domesticated, kept as pets, or even utilized as tools, like a modern-day version of the Flintstones' animal appliances. Starting a new game of Pokemon means meeting Professor Oak, an elderly scientist who has devoted his life to researching these ubiquitous animals. After he explains the premise, players get to meet and name their in-game avatar, a preteen boy. The professor also introduces his grandson slash our rival, whom we also get to name. In Japan, these characters default to Satoshi and Shigeru, a nod to series creator Satoshi Tajiri and famed Nintendo producer Shigeru Miyamoto. Tajiri later told Time magazine that the protagonist is, quote, me when I was a kid, end quote. Does that mean he considers Miyamoto a rival? Far from it. In that same interview, Tajiri says, quote, I really look up to Miyamoto-san. Since I was a teenager, playing Donkey Kong, he's always been my role model. He's a mentor for my heart. End quote. After an adorable animation transforms Satoshi from a full-size manga character to a tiny sprite befitting a handheld RPG, gameplay begins. As typical for the genre, we open in our hero's bedroom at home in a small town. Mom is downstairs watching TV. She says Professor Oak wants to talk. Heading outside, we see the entirety of Pallet Town consists of just three buildings, one of which serves as Oak's laboratory. Whether Satoshi heeds his mother's message or not, the professor appears the moment he sets foot on the only path out of town. Oak explains that wild Pokemon live in the tall grass, exactly what Satoshi's standing in, and they pose a danger to unescorted youths. For everyone's safety, and to better illustrate how this game works, the professor brings Satoshi back to the lab and offers him a Pokemon to call his own. Players get to pick one of three basic Pokemon to start their journey, each embodying a different elemental type. Bulbasaur's plant-based abilities represent Earth. Charmander's heat deals fire damage. And Squirtle attacks with water. The game includes many more elements, all of which have their own strengths and weaknesses relative to each other. Whichever Pokemon Satoshi chooses, Shigeru always takes one with an advantage over it, making confrontations with him a perpetual uphill challenge. Speaking of Shigeru, he immediately urges Satoshi to face him in a battle, the bread and butter of Pokemon's gameplay. Each trainer summons a Pokemon and takes turns commanding them to attack, use an item, or run away. In later fights, players can opt to switch Pokemon to better counter their opponents, but at this stage, it's a one-on-one contest. Win or lose, Shigeru vows to make my Pokemon fight to toughen it up, and embarks on his own adventure. He'll pop up now and again during Satoshi's quest as a recurring boss battle, each time bringing stronger Pokemon. From this moment forward, armed with Professor Oak's gift, players depart from Pallet Town and travel the world in search of Pokemon. Exploring tall grass triggers random battles against other Pokemon, whom you can knock out for experience points and cash. This sounds like any number of other RPGs, but Pokemon adds a twist. The only way to expand your party is to capture another creature in battle. This means fighting, but not fully defeating, an opponent before throwing a Pokeball at them in their weakened state. If it works, you get a new traveling companion. Pokemon contains 151 varieties of critters, but not all of them wander about in nature. Some Pokemon evolve into new forms through combat or with special items. Other trainers will offer to trade their unique Pokemon for one in Satoshi's collection. A few Pokemon are so rare, the game speaks of them as mythical beings like we might describe unicorns or Bigfoot. The most reliable method of completing your so-called Pokedex is trading with other players in the real world using the Game Boy's Link Cable. Satoshi Tajiri told Time magazine that when he first saw Nintendo's handheld hardware at work, quote, "I thought of actual living organisms moving back and forth across the cable," end quote. This became a core element of Pokemon's gameplay. "I wanted to design a game that involved interactive communication," Tajiri told Time. Remember, there was no internet then. The concept of the communication cable is really Japanese. One-on-one. To that end, Pokemon debuted with not one, but two slightly different cartridges, each with its own distinct lineup of monsters to encounter. Speaking to Gamasutra in 2009, Original composer Junichi Masuda explained, quote, "The basic concept of Pokemon is trading. So how could we make the trading more attractive?" End quote. He credits producer Shigeru Miyamoto with the idea of dividing the roster into two groups as a means to encourage players to seek out others for swapping. At launch in Japan, the two versions were called Red and Green. An updated version, Blue, shipped at the end of 1996. When localizing Pokemon for international markets, Nintendo used this revised edition as the base, eventually releasing Pokemon Red and Pokemon Blue in the United States in the fall of 1998. In preparing Pokemon for its tour of distant lands, Nintendo oversaw many changes to the game, including renaming a majority of the creatures to better fit local languages. Some, including series mascot Pikachu, remain the same across all borders, while others have different handles in different regions. According to producer Tsunekazu Ishihara, Nintendo of America sought even more radical changes to Pokemon by redesigning the monsters. In a 2000 Japanese interview with Nintendo Online Magazine, Ishihara said the US branch initially pushed back on the grounds that the Pokemon were too cute. Their proposal included a sketch of Pikachu he described as, quote, "a tabby cat with large breasts, like something from the musical Cats. It was an illustration I'd never show another person in my life." End quote. By the time Pokemon finally showed up in America, the video game arrived alongside a cross-media marketing blitz, which benefited from 2 years of pre-release hype. Before anyone in the US knew the difference between a Voltorb and an Electrode, stories of Nintendo's newest sensation abounded on the nascent internet. Even a public relations nightmare, such as an incident where the Pokemon anime sent Japanese kids into seizures, added to the game's mystique. I remember scouring the web for a low-resolution postage stamp-sized video of the supposedly cursed clip. When my friends and I finally got our hands on Pokemon Red and Blue, we were prepared to game the system by purposefully buying different versions and trading with each other as soon and as often as possible. Doing so not only accelerated the growth of our creatures, Pokemon captured by another trainer receive extra XP, but helped us complete our Pokedex faster as well. I hadn't touched a Game Boy in years, and my 1989 launch model had huge chunks of dead pixels on the screen. But playing Pokemon convinced me to upgrade to the newest model, a translucent purple Game Boy Color. It didn't matter that, as a base Game Boy cartridge, Pokemon looked mostly the same on either device. The excitement surrounding the game motivated me to carry a Game Boy around at all times, so I could play in the post office break room or anywhere else I had a few minutes to kill. Decades later, my time with Blue remains my definitive Pokemon experience. Nintendo offered up enhanced revisions and sequels one after another, but I had already hung up my trainer's cap. Periodically, curiosity gets the better of me, and I buy Pokemon for our new system to see if updated graphics or the promise of online trading might pique my interest, but I never last more than a week or two. One obstacle for me is the ever-increasing number of Pokemon in the game's ecosystem. I found the "Gotta Catch 'Em All" marketing hook appealing in the late 90s because it felt feasible. I may have bent a few rules, but I did in fact complete my Pokedex by registering all 151 original Pokemon. With 30 years of expansions, spin-offs, and updates, online databases now report over 1,000 Pokemon exist. I know that if I dive in with the latest installment, it won't expect me to gather up every last one. But I see that figure, and my eyes glaze over. I can't keep up with Pokemon for the same reason I don't follow college sports. There are simply too many participants to consider. That said, I am not immune to Pokeganda. I love looking up Pokemon and seeing what new designs Tajiri's teams have conjured. When I visit the city of Osaka, I frequently stop on the 13th floor of Daimaru, where the official Nintendo and Pokemon stores stand side by side, the latter offering a slew of adorable souvenirs I can bring with me as gifts on trips abroad. When a new game makes the rounds on television, my daughter invariably tells me that she wants a copy of her own, at which point I remind her of the Pokemon Let's Go Eevee I bought her that she barely touched. As I type these words, a commemorative tin I got for Valentine's Day, I don't know how many years ago, sits next to my PC, adorned with pixel art of classic Pokemon. The sweets inside are long gone, just like my copy of Pokemon Blue and the hundreds of hours I spent tracking down all 151 original monsters. In a way, my fond Pokemon memories mirror those of my outdoor adventures as a child. It was fun because of the company I kept, and the promise of the unexpected. Each examination, each step into the unknown, might lead to a new discovery. Be it a rare Tauros, or a hidden Playboy magazine. Thank you for listening to this audio version of my latest This Week in Retro column, a Retronauts exclusive for our Patreon supporters. My name is Diamond Fight, and when I'm not writing or podcasting, I'm updating my website, fightclub.me. That's FEITCLUB.ME. Good night! また、たくさん必ず、どこかになかまはいるはず。151の喜び、151の夢、151の思い出、目指して頑張ろう。